During your internet browsing or weekly podcast downloading binge, you have stumbled upon Hot Air, the DC Breeze's podcast. My name is Greg Esser, and I'm the host of that podcast. The DC Breeze, of course, are the representative from Washington, D.C. in the American Ultimate Disc League, Professional Ultimate Frisbee, and they're currently sitting at 4-2 here, six games into the 2016 season. Before I get into today's agenda and everything, I want to quickly shout out to all of the sponsors that make the DC Breeze season happen. Papa John's Pizza, Waveborn Sunglasses, The Big Board, a bar here in DC, WAFSI, Washington Area Frisbee Club, Moral Performance, The Rose Physical Therapy Group, and Oak Creek Apparel. Shout out and thanks to all them. I'd also like to thank the band that lends their tunes to the Hot Air podcast, and that, of course, is Broke Royals. Today, a little bit different here on Hot Air. Typically, I bring on a guest, and that guest and I will talk anything from a stat-heavy conversation, if they are just a stat head from around the D.C. area or an ultimate head around the D.C. area. Sometimes I'll talk to players, interview questions, life stories, locker room stories of time on the Breeze. Sometimes I talk to coaches, and then we talk a little bit more about strategy. This week, I want to cover what's happened in the last two games. I want to talk a little bit about the season outlook, some of the strategic stuff that's going on. And in order to plow through what I want to talk to, I'm going to blow away that old model. And this week particularly, I am going to solo cast. And we'll see where I stack up to other great solo casters around Ultimate. I'll do my best Charlie Eisenhood or Evan Lepler impression here today. And we can see where I fall on the spectrum, I'm sure, short of those two greats. But I'll do my best impressions. So what I want to get through more specifically then on today's podcast are things like the most recent two games. There was a New York game that was held on the 7th of May, and then there was a game against the Philadelphia Phoenix that occurred in Philadelphia on the 14th of May. So I'm going to do kind of recaps of those two games, then I'm going to talk kind of the season outlook, where the Breeze stand at this point in the season, some of the games to look forward to, and where I think this is all shaping up and going. And then I'm going to quickly talk at the end about some of the stat leaders such far in the season and maybe even some adjustments that I think the Breeze will make to be even a better team and kind of which way they're trending. So that's a lot of stuff, and I think the most effective delivery method is just to have me monologuing, going at it, 100% raw, uncut, Greg Esser. Here we go. Oh, and if I need a water break somewhere in there, instead of using that theme music from Broke Royals to intro my guests, I am instead going to use it for a water break. So I think that's a great use of the Broke Royals song. Strung Up in Lights is the one that I use. Strung Up in Lights, rope me a glass of water, and drink up so I can hydrate enough to get through the to get through the full episode of Hot Air. First thing I want to talk about, that New York game. It was a nail-biter, all sorts of exciting. It featured a huge comeback by the New York Empire in the fourth quarter that made things scary from the Breeze fan perspective. But ultimately, the Breeze pulled it out and got the win. They win 23-22 in double overtime. The second time this year the Breeze have been in the double overtime situation. And as I'll get to, I think it showed. But let's talk a little bit about kind of those first three quarters. It was the Breeze were really controlling things. They went up early. There was a lot of double-team looks that I thought were very interesting, particularly from the D-line. So as the D-line pulled the disc down the field, oftentimes the first mark they put on the disc was a double-team. And this forced the New York first throw so often to be a five-yard dump. And I was talking and I was thinking about this with the guy that I announced the games with, Glenn Poole. Him and I do the blown coverage broadcast of all the Breeze home games this year. And we were kind of saying, you know, this is an interesting way to use a double team. It's not a very aggressive way to use a double team, but by forcing that initial 5-yard dump, it does a couple things that are pretty useful on the field. First of all, it's almost like it gives the pool an extra 4 seconds to land in the hands of its eventual recipient. And that in itself does a couple things, right? That gives your downfield defense an opportunity to set up a little bit more. It lets, if you're getting unders, if you're try and prevent a throw underneath the stack, first and foremost. It allows your defense to set up that way. And so if, even if you're not getting perfect hang times or there's a little bit of a crosswind, that can be a really valuable thing. It also doesn't lose, you know, either of the handlers. Yes, one handler has an easy reset, but both of your defenders are still in the neighborhood of both of those primary handlers. So those marks aren't hard to attain either. So I thought this was an interesting thing the Breeze were doing, a very subtle thing, but getting the defense set up in the right position prior to the first upfield throw by using that double team defense. I think on the other hand, maybe it gives up a little bit of power position initially. You need to make sure you've got that last back in the stack and you're preventing that second handler from stepping up, you know, 5 yards, using their momentum and then throwing deep right away. But I think they were able to do that effectively as well, making sure that someone was aware that to avoid a first throw, a big throw downfield, 40-yarder, and making them dump that disc and not be able to take advantage of the immediate power position. So anyhow, the general theme, if you will, or what was going on in those first couple of quarters, you might ask. I think that the Breeze were really strong on defense, and they were forcing particularly the two handlers to do a lot of the work. They would give and go out of that double team a lot of times, and then they were still having real trouble finding downfield passes. And those two primary handlers for New York were Keegan and Aloro. So we saw a lot of those two guys in the first three quarters, and a lot of kind of miscues. A lot of times one of them would be covered, and right when they were making the pivot move, turning their hips, coming back to get a cut, or changing directions in their cut, would be when their counterpart would release the disc. And so those miscues, I think, resulted in some turnovers in the Breeze's favor. And those miscues do a lot of times because they didn't have their first or second look downfield, and they were forced to rely on one another. And even the coverage between the two of them in the backfield was often good enough to make them make a second or third move and therefore result in some drop discs. Really reliant on those two, and maybe those two also, I'm wondering, you know, if New York is retooling their attack a little bit. I looked up some numbers, and so far to that point in the season, Keegan and Aloro, or I think it was particularly Aloro, had thrown 17 of his 66 passes to Keegan, and that percentage has decreased dramatically since that game. Maybe there's another option coming in the backfield for those two. Maybe those two aren't functioning as much as the two primary handlers. Now Aloro's throw percentage to Keegan looks much more around like 12 or 15% instead of, I think that's almost 33%, if I can do some quick math. Maybe a little less than 33, but almost 30%. So interesting to see kind of New York evolving maybe after that Breeze game and islanding those two guys in the backfield. And maybe that's changing a little bit. As the game progresses, New York was able to involve some more of their players in the offense, and you really saw the third and fourth quarter, they really started to ride Kuzmowicz, Norton, Murphy getting involved in the attack. And I think the Breeze are still playing very open lines at this time. The Breeze, you know, have I think, you know, 6, 7, 8 guys this game getting 20 points. And I think that's valuable because as the game gets close, and yeah, New York involving all five of these players really drives the comeback, gets the 5 points that are needed, almost wins the game, quite honestly. It was a Bob Lou hammer with 10 seconds on the clock when the Breeze are down by one in the fourth quarter that just drops in a pocket that can't be defended. It just sails so close to a defender, so close to another Breeze intended target. I think it was Chuck Cantone, you know, through almost the open arms of a jumping Chuck Cantone. We know how the vertical on Chuck Cantone. So right out of his outstretched arms, and for a moment I thought it was an overthrow. But it finds its intended target in Matt Kerrigan. Matt Kerrigan receives this hammer, just this bullet of a hammer that drops right into him with 6 seconds on the clock and immediately turns upfield, pivots, finds another narrow window to Wodatch, scores that point. It was amazing to watch. The crowd goes wild. One of the most excited crowds that I have seen. Everyone's on their feet, thumping and pumping. And it was quite a play, and it tied the game, took it to overtime, And so now in the first overtime, it ends in a score of 2-2. Both teams score twice in that first overtime. New York starts with offensive possession in this overtime. So the 2-2 is pretty favorable to the Breeze, and that includes a Breeze break. There were exclamation mark scores from Brian Marshall. Cantone gets in there. Outstanding cutting in that overtime by Monroe. He fought through contact a couple times and makes the catch underneath, even though it's highly contested by these New York guys. And what you started to see in the overtime is after riding these five guys all game, in my mind, in Keegan, Aloro, Norton, Kuzmowicz, who goes by Muck, much easier for me to say, and Murphy, a couple of those guys start going down. Little injuries here or there, banged up, a cramp here or there. And they're leaving points halfway through. I think it only happened on two occasions, but if it's happening on two occasions where they're leaving the field, you have to think that there's some fatigue when they're staying on the field. And even though they're returning to the game after these cramps, you have to think those cramps are still weighing heavily in their mind. So the Breeze did not have to do that, however. I had mentioned kind of how spread out the points were this game. You know, the Breeze in this first overtime are playing guys like Neely, Lou, Cranston, McDonald, Cantone, guys that haven't put up 20 points in this game yet. They haven't played 50% of the points in this 23-22 game. So that's pretty impressive that they're that deep enough that they're still putting out guys they are that confident in that are playing their 19th points of the game. And that holds true certainly into the first overtime. That the universe line the Breeze put out, Neely, Lou, Cranston, Matsuka, Cantone, Wodach, and McDonald have three guys that have yet to reach 20 points in the game at that point. I believe it was McDonald's 20th point, if memory serves. That kind of depth, I think, is really what drove home the end of that game. And it was an exciting finish. It was at Gallaudet University. I encourage you to come out to future Breeze games this year in the district because if we, you know, we've seen two double overtime games so far this year. We play the Rush once again. Exciting stuff yet to happen. If I could do a couple of the stats from that game, I would tell you things like Wodach, just an outstanding contributor. 5 assists, 3 goals, 2 blocks. Cantone, 1 assist, 3 goals, no blocks. Brad Scott, 2 assists, 3 goals, no blocks. Brian Marshall, 1 goal, 1 assist, and 2 blocks. So those were some of the highlight lines of the game. But, you know, I kind of talked about those individual moments and some of the contributors. Very impressive. I did not name a MVP on the blown coverage broadcast. I'd like to do so now. As I'm trying to name kind of an MVP for every game and give a final season count then at the end of the year. And I was tempted to give it to Cantone. He had 3 big skies in the first half that were essential for the Breeze taking the lead that they did. But based on how the game ended, and so, you know, the Empire comeback, I think I have to give it to some maybe more crunch time contributors. I'm going to give Wodach his 2nd MVP of the year. Those 5 assists came at big moments at times and were huge. Wodach fought through contact, much as I mentioned Monroe, a couple unders that very easily could have been blocked. You know, Wodach used his shoulders to body out his man and make sure he was the first one to arrive at the disc. 2 blocks on top of that, Wodach, my MVP of that New York game. So the other game that happened was against the Philadelphia Phoenix. And this one I was not fortunate enough to be at, but I've talked to a lot of players on both sides. I've seen a lot of the game footage. I think we all know at this point in the season, and even after last year, the Philly Phoenix are probably one of the weaker teams in the ADL and certainly one of the weaker ones in the East. And so I think it was a great opportunity for the Breeze to kind of show off their offensive consistency, work out some of the kinks that they may have noticed so far in the season, and I think they largely did so. They won the game comfortably. They won by 9. The outstanding or the amazing statistic to me is that although the Phoenix got plenty of blocks, their D-line didn't convert one of them. Not a single break for the Philadelphia Phoenix this week, or last week. This was on the 14th, as I said. So that's pretty impressive that even when the O-line turned it, they were tenacious. They prevented the D-line from getting the full break. So that was, as I said, impressive. We saw an interesting thing. Ben Fang, who's been sidelined all year, played his first action of the game of the season, and he played in Philadelphia, registering a dozen or so points. And yeah, I mean, we still saw some of that double teaming that we saw in the New York game. Very fluid the DC Breeze defense was in moving in and out of the double team. There was no kind of standard pairs of these two players put on the double team. And that maybe is interesting because we've seen more consistency around the league and who they want their two marks to be. They're almost rabbiting the disc, two guys that will follow it all around the field. But that's maybe an interesting thing about the Breeze is it's more interchangeable and these guys are getting used to each other. You've got a lot of different pieces coming together on the 2016 Breeze. You've got this core contingency of guys that have played Breeze in past years. You've got some of the guys that are club players for the very excellent Truck Stop that are first-year Breeze players. You've got some of the out-of-town guys, a Chicago contingency, Brett Matsuka coming in from Kansas City. This integration of a couple different pieces, and you're starting to see that fluidity in terms of double teams on the mark, in terms of rolling, and some switchy defense that frustrated the Phoenix at times. There's always a time in a switchy defense where men are open, but the Phoenix don't always have the creative throwers to get it to the open guys. You saw big games out of some of the scorers for Philadelphia, but not quite big enough to matter. You know, Kenny Wells, Carter, Strauss, all guys that netted three goals in this game, and those guys have to have really, you know, even more than three goals, apparently, if the Phoenix are to pull off an upset against the Breeze or maybe even in the East as a whole. But yeah, so I think you saw that learning, that offense, ironing out kinks, and it looked really good, particularly on offense in that game. So I'll give you some of the stats maybe from the game. You got Matsuka with three assists, one goal, one defense, one block rather. McDonald, 3-2-3. I'm just gonna read off numbers, but it's always first assists, then goals, then blocks. Kolek, 0-5-0. Monroe, 1-5-1. Schaffner, 1-2-2. And Spiva with two assists, one goal, and two blocks. The outstanding one here, I think I'm going to actually give, I don't love doing this, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give a dual MVP award. The viral clip from this game was a Callahan that occurred with both Kolek and Monroe on the mark. Monroe just, yeah, I almost should do an entire podcast on him right now. He's been putting up a phenomenal season so far, the 20-year-old out of George Washington, you know, still not having graduated, and he's already in the AUDL, just shocking the world this year. So I'm going to anyhow give my dual MVP to the two of them as best represented in that viral clip. It was Monroe that tallied the Callahan, but it was Kolek on the mark that got the block. The teamwork of those two and particularly the existence of that great Callahan clip that's been going around Facebook and Twitter, I'll name a double MVP, or a rare double MVP of Kolek and Monroe. And it's time for my water break. So Broke Royals, play me out and then play me back in as I grab myself some hydration here. Wow, who would have thought that liquefying some Papa John's pizza in a blender could taste so good? I feel hydrated. I feel full of protein from the sausage and carbohydrates. That was a good hydration break. Thank you, Broke Royals. So I want to quickly go through some of the stats. I didn't drink liquefied pizza. It was a blue Gatorade and delicious. It was delicious. So I want to go through some of the stats that have accumulated so far for the Breeze in six games here in 2016. That'll be real quick. I want to speculate on what the upcoming schedule means for the Breeze and the future of the season and talk a little bit about maybe some things adjustments maybe I look forward to, particularly as I look at like the the throwaways, the blocks, the assists per point. Before I get to the per point stuff, let's do a quick rundown of where we stand for the season. Plus minus, you've got Wodash leading the pack at 19, Scott and Kolek also registering the top three at 18 and 17 apiece. Assists, Nicky Spiva on top here with 19, Kolek 14. The surprise that I might think, based on him being more a handler than a thrower, or sorry, more a cutter than a thrower, is Wodash registering third on the assist scale. He's sitting at 13. Goals, Wodash is up there, 14. Kolek sitting at 13, the five that he scored in Philadelphia, being absolutely beast. Five out of 13 of his goals came last weekend in the city of brotherly love. There's a three-way tie for goals at the third spot. Scott, Cranston, McDonald, all registering 10. Blocks, Spiva on top with 13, Schaffner 7, Scott and Cranston 6. Here is, I think, where the Breeze are particularly interesting in points played. They are spreading them out really well. I've mentioned this before. Spiva sitting at 130, Kolek 126, Cranston 119. The only other man to accomplish the century mark here in this young season is Brad Scott sitting at 108. So a good job really spreading out the points, and I mean, I think that's indicative of a large roster. I mentioned the New York game, and I think New York has a reputation for being kind of this army of many interchangeable parts and a deep bench. But I think really maybe in 2016 that moniker should go more toward the Breeze, spreading out playing time, a really deep team, not riding any one or group of players to their success so far. But I think the real interesting thing here is the per point stats. Throwaways per point. Spiva, 0.15. McLean, 0.14. Those two also show up, though, on the blocks per point. They are taking maybe more risks with their throws, getting more throwaways, but also getting more blocks. Spiva's the first on blocks per point, 0.1. Schaffner up there, 0.08. McLean, 0.07. The particularly interesting thing that Anthony McLean appears on both these lists is the guy has only had 14 points played in 2016. And I find that noteworthy because he played a lot of points in 2015, and I think I would tell you the type of player he is, you know, more lots of blocks, not tons of throwaways, partially because he's not a guy that gets a ton of touches on the discs, playing a lot of D-line points. But I think because we have this very small sample size, we don't know kind of where he's going to fall for the 2016 season. So I look forward to, you know, seeing him get more playing time throughout this season and seeing those numbers balance out. Can he remain a top block contributor? Will his throwaways per point, you know, decrease a little bit as it normalizes, he gets some more? Maybe they'll both normalize and he'll be not in the top three for either. But I tend to think he might be a guy that can stay in the blocks, and the throwaways are a little bit more the outlier. On the assists end of things, Spiva is also first there, 0.15. Helton, 0.14. McLean, also 0.14. So another, you know, few points. McLean, big impact on both sides of the disc. Throwaways, assists, blocks, everything. But Spiva is absolutely phenomenal, right? I just talked about him having registered the most points played on this team, and he's got the most assists per point. Just, you know, really turning it on here through six games. The most interesting stat per points played, however, maybe goals. The 20-year-old Tyler Monroe is sitting at 0.18, the most goals per point. Wodash is up there, tons of goals, tons of points played. A fantastic contributor. Bolin Kolchin returning to the Breeze in 2016, 0.12, also in the top three. But really, I'm looking at that Monroe. Not only is he up there, he's got a couple percentage points up on Wodash and Duke. And that's, you know, phenomenal for a young player. Yeah, just really excited about that trend continuing and another really versatile threat downfield for the Breeze emerging in Tyler Monroe. So it'll be interesting to see as the season plays out, you know, which of those trends continue, which don't. But I think that's at least my first take on, you know, where we lie statistically in the 2016 season. Last thing I want to talk about here is standings overall in the Eastern Division. I mentioned them at the beginning. Toronto sitting at 5-1, Breeze 4-2, New York 4-2. And so it's really a dogfight, and the Montreal at 2-4. So it's really a dogfight for that last, I mean, you want to be the second seed because you will get to host the division finals in the East, but you really need to make sure you're in the top three so you have a chance to win this whole thing, right? You want to make the playoffs. And so the Breeze are sitting pretty nicely, and I would tell you that even though they are tied with New York, not only do they have the head-to-head advantage right now, but also I think they have the slightly easier schedule going forward. The Breeze have already played the top dogs, the Rush, twice, and so they only have one more game against the Toronto team. New York Lover will play them twice more, and once away, once at home. The Breeze's final game will be on, I think it is, the 4th of June here in the nation's capital. So, you know, if there's a chance for the Breeze maybe even to take that home, they've shown they've been able to stick close so far this year. You know, maybe that's their shot to finally overtake the Rush once and for all. Montreal, maybe up against the wall, still definitely a contender for that final playoff spot. And the Breeze will see them this upcoming weekend here in the nation's capital, May 22nd. It's a Sunday game. It'll be the second of the weekend for the Breeze. And I think here is an important point. On the 21st, the Breeze travel to New York, play an away game, return to the capital the next day for a home game against Montreal. Interesting that it's a doubleheader to begin with. More interesting, New York does not have a doubleheader. New York plays just one game that weekend. So New York is going to throw the cold kitchen sink at the Breeze in the Big Apple. And then the Breeze will maybe have some considerations about how hard to drive your players, knowing that you've got a game against Montreal that Montreal is looking at and probably has circled on their calendars as a win to really wedge their way into the top three. Other upcoming games, June 4th, I think I just mentioned actually, against the Rush. It's a home game here in D.C. New York will also play the Rush that weekend. So that's a big weekend for the Rush, that first weekend in June. So I think that's kind of the outlook on the next 2 weeks here. By that point in time, you should have another hot episode of Hot Air coming at you. Yeah, lots of good things in this young season. Hopefully you enjoyed listening to the solo cast. Come out to a game. Find the Breeze on Twitter, the DC Breeze. Find me on Twitter, the Greg Esser. Find a friend on Twitter. You know, it's a friendly place until, actually, Twitter, probably not a friendly place. But anyway, be active on Twitter. Let me know what you like about Hot Air. Let me know what you don't like. And adjustments will be made. I appreciate all the feedback I get. Until next time, this is Greg Esser. Adios.